Hey, welcome to the Bulwark Podcast, a special weekend mega edition. I'm joined by JVL. Hey, welcome back to the podcast.
Hey, Charlie.
We were supposed to be joined by Sarah Longwell, but she's doing the Sarah Longwell thing.
Like many beautiful women.
Yeah.
Sarah comes and goes on her own schedule.
So she will like parachute in at some point.
That's when the show will really begin.
Is there anything else that anyone can talk about other than impeachment?
No. And I can tell you because we have this website that publishes things. There's nothing anybody else can read about either. So we just if it's not about impeachment right now, America doesn't want to hear it.
You know, I was actually listening to an interview with one of the Democratic presidential candidates, and they were talking about impeachment, and then they were shifting because apparently they made an agreement beforehand to talk about health care and drug prices, and you could just feel the oxygen out of it. It's like, okay, this actually is important. It affects people's lives, and nobody wants to talk about it right now because it is impeachment fever.
That's right. We've got a fever, and the only prescription is more impeachment.
Okay, now let me bounce this off you, because we know how this movie ends, right? Okay, by this I mean the House is going to vote to impeach President Trump either later this year or early next year, and then the United States Senate is going to vote very, very quickly to acquit him, and he's going to claim exoneration, then it goes to the voters, and how does it play out?
Like the Kool-Aid guy bursting through the brick wall.
Okay, well then you just missed because I gave the whole movie how it's going to end. So I don't know.
Okay.
So I
believe what you have just sketched out is the most likely scenario. However, the range of possible outcomes is so broad that I actually would I would bet the field versus any specific outcome, if that makes sense to you. And I think there are a whole bunch of different ways this could go. The most likely outcome is, Democrats impeach in the House, he then skates in the Senate. But what happens if in the Senate some Republicans peel off? You're not going to get 20, but what happens if like 5 or 6 of them do? What happens if there's a majority vote? And what happens if they vote to censure him? I don't even remember during 1998, there was a whole bunch of, well, what if we acquit him, but we censure him, right? There were a lot of, half measures that people considered. Because Democrats really didn't want to be on the hook looking like they were excusing him because the public opinion didn't really want Clinton impeached, but it didn't like Clinton. That's the other thing people are forgetting, right? Bill Clinton had 8 years of peace and prosperity, and at the end of the day, his party turned the White House over to Republicans because voters were sick and tired of him, even if they didn't want impeachment. Entirely possible that this happens now. So We don't really know. Somebody literally 5 minutes ago emailed the three of us, Sarah, Charlie, and myself, saying, what if the deal that they make on impeachment is that he just doesn't run again? Like he announces, like, look, I'm just not going to run for reelection. That seems like a reasonable thing. I mean,
But we're talking about not Donald
a high
Trump.
Not a high probability outcome.
This, of course, is the problem of analyzing Donald Trump. If you apply any sort of rational measure, you're going to be constantly surprised by all of this. But I mean, Sarah, I guess the question, by the way, hey, thanks for showing up. We appreciate it. But the Democrats have to understand that at the end of this process, Donald Trump will not be removed from office.
So I didn't hear your opening thing, but I assume the pitch that you're making, based on the tone you just took, is that you think this impeachment is a bad idea.
No, I think it's actually a very good idea, but I'm just saying that we have to understand how the scenario is going to play out. He will be impeached, but then he's going to claim exoneration when the Senate acquits him.
He is, and this is just to something that JVL said. I think the most critical political differential in all of this is whether or not you can get a handful of Republicans to support it. Because if it is vaguely bipartisan, even if he does skate, he can't say total exoneration, number one. It fractures
the
Republican.
He can say anything
wants
will. You
know, he'll say total exoneration even if the Senate votes convict him 90-10. He'll
that's
still
true.
Claim exoneration.
He can claim that exoneration has a hyphen in it.
Yeah, that's true. But although, the whole thing about sketching out the scenarios around impeachment, the one thing that I think is difficult to do about that now is that the situation is so live. And the fact is, what we know from that whistleblower report is that there are a whole bunch of people who had direct knowledge of whether or not this stuff happened. And they're going to testify. And the closer you get to real smoking gun territory, like the Nixon tape where he says, I did it, go break in, the closer you get to that, the harder it is going to be for a category of Republican to stick with him.
You know, by the way, sort of a digression here. You're reading through this whistleblower complaint. It is kind of remarkable there's only been one whistleblower. And you kind of wonder whether this is going to be the start of something or where it's going to go. Okay, here's a question for you, though. The Democrats are right now trying to decide how narrow are they going to make the focus and how quick do they go? And a strong case can be made. You just go with the Ukraine stuff. You don't relitigate everything else. And you strike while the iron is hot, which is why we're hearing that they might have a vote on this around Thanksgiving.
What about
time.
The caravans? We want to talk about the border. You don't want to wrap that into impeachment, too?
No, I think that would be a bad idea. But the terms of the speed. But, you know, when I'm flying here today, I'm reading through this New York Times of all the detail, and you realize all of the nuggets that could still be investigated, all the stones that could be unturned. As you mentioned, Sarah, how many other phone conversations are in this vault? Bill tweeted out rather interesting point here. If Donald Trump is obsessed with going after Biden, did he bring it up with the Chinese president, Xi? Has he brought it up with Putin? Has he talked about it? Will we find out other conversations? You know, what did Rudy Giuliani do? What is in his paper trail here? What did Mike Pence know? The thing is that they could go fast and hard and vote, but they could also, if they do that, then aren't they overlooking the possibility of all the things that they can dig up?
Well, I think the question is they. I think they should move expeditiously, and also I think they should not loaded up with a whole bunch of past things or ancillary things. Just to, you know, the way a prosecutor would prosecute a case would be like, well, we're going to bring as many charges as possible, and we're going to see which ones stick.
So you're like all over. You're done with Mueller.
I think if you wanted to take your absolute best obstruction charge and include that, like their Lawfare's got a really good sort of 5 points that they think, you know, you could do with impeachment. So and I think that's fine. I just think if you start doing kitchen sinking it. That's not a good idea. But I do think just reading this, yeah, there's a lot of ground to uncover here, and they should do it. They should do it fast. But I mean, they should get these people up in front of Congress quickly, figure out who these people are. But the Rudy Giuliani stuff is actually super wild and is a whole other. I mean, he was on Laura Ingraham last night holding up his phone, just reading texts from the State Department. Like, there's a lot of people wrapped up in this and a lot of places it could go.
See, if you were writing the movie, though, somebody would come up with a Giuliani character and you go, no, that's not plausible. But
in the movie, Giuliani winds up dead. Mm. Right. Before he can testify. Like, oh, he has an aneurysm or something. You know, and it turns out they've actually killed some homeless guy and made him look like Giuliani's body. And Giuliani, but then it's like on a beach in Belize with sipping a Mai Tai or something.
Well,
we were talking
about this before. Matt Lewis tweeted out. And it may seem morbid, but if Rudy Giuliani had died back in 2002, if he'd had a heart attack back then, there would be statues of him all over New York City. He would be regarded as one of the great leaders in American history. And you, where is this going to go? Where is this going to end? He's rogue. He's ripping on Mike Pompeo. You can see a scenario in which Trump tries to throw him under the bus, but that seems difficult since we now have him on that call basically saying, Rudy's my guy. He's my envoy. This thing could get very ugly.
So you could have a Lincoln team of rivals, or you can have a Trumpian team of vipers. And the problem with the team of vipers model is eventually these guys start really biting each other. I mean, even the way that he sent Bolton out of there, I don't know where Bolton is in all this, but you got to think he's somewhere in this. That's right.
Bolton, no, right? Bolton 100% knows the score.
Right, but I mean, I think he's one of the leakers, or like people close to him. Like, don't you think he's involved in all this?
Well, and somebody put out a list of all the national security staffers who've recently left the White House and therefore would not be subject to any claim of executive privilege.
Right.
Yeah. No, all these people can be called to testify, and you know, so I'm of two minds on the idea of speed, because on the one hand, you don't want to short circuit the investigative aspect of this. On the other hand, as we've seen over the last 10 days, this moving at speed, whatever you give up in terms of thoroughness on the investigation, you gain in keeping the Trumpkins and the Republicans off balance. They have been the terrible lapses in crisis management that they have committed over the last 10 days, where they tried telling people that the stories were a nothing burger, you know, that the documents were a nothing burger, and then they come out. Then the president finds himself in front of an audience calling for death to traitors. And I mean, speed kills. Like, it really.
Why do you think it seems like old news now, but why do you think they released that transcript, that non-transcript transcript?
I mean, Sarah, you do crisis communications from time to time.
Yeah,
right?
Because
they thought there was nothing wrong with it? Because he thought there was nothing wrong with it? Because they thought they'd have to do it eventually, and so why not get it out now? I don't know.
It might have been some of that, but I think that the play here is that they're running the Russia Mueller playbook, and it worked for them then, and so they're doing the same thing now. So you see, right, there's a bunch of Republican senators right now where when asked if they've read the whistleblower complaint, they say, oh, no, I haven't read it yet. Okay, so with the Mueller report, when it was 430 pages, that was one thing. This is 9 pages. Like, they can't just go on and say, well, I haven't read it. And the same thing with the White House, right? What they think, if they can obfuscate and throw up a bunch of, like, competing narratives, that they can muddy the water. Problem is, it's a much simpler story. So, you know, the whole it's a lot easier for people to understand. It's much more clear cut. I also think, like, they think last time Barr got out in front of it, he framed it up. It made the whole thing look different in that context. And so they think, okay, we'll get out in front of it. We'll frame it up. The problem is, this isn't a 400-page report that you've got a month before anybody else sees. It's just a different thing. That playbook's not going to work this time.
I think, in part, this is also a reflection of the fact of how morally tone-deaf Donald Trump is, that he does not understand why he did something that was inappropriate.
Well,
there was anything
is
wrong
also
with
clear.
It. Yeah,
I
mean,
way, this is the definition of
this
the
is
insanity
the way
defense.
I do things.
Right, the way the insanity defense works in criminal law is, it isn't just, are you allowed to say that you think it's right for you to do it? The question is, do you believe that society thinks it's right too? And so, for instance, a contrary indicator on an insanity defense is somebody who wipes the prints off. Because if you wipe print off, what you're doing is demonstrating that you actually think society would look askance at you doing whatever it is you've done. I think Donald Trump could reasonably say he simply believes that the entire world works like this. And it isn't just he sees nothing wrong with it for himself, but he assumes that this is how everybody everywhere operates. And this goes to the fundamental objection that people like us have had from day one, right? That you are putting somebody in who simply is incompatible with any of the norms of professional governance.
And yet it looks like conservative media, including Fox News, is all in on all of this.
I can't believe that's true, Charlie. These people care about principles.
I'm sorry. You actually delivered that with a straight face, which was pretty good. You know, Drudge being an outlier, which I find fascinating, because he's been the assignment editor for much conservative media, a lot of conservative media. But it is remarkable watching, you know, as talk radio lines up, the social world, that they're willing to believe almost anything. And I was watching Rudy Giuliani, and I don't know whether he's showing up drunk or what's going on with him.
Yes, the answer to that is yes.
Which is like, this is going to get it much, much, much uglier. He's throwing out stuff that has no basis in reality whatsoever. And it occurs to me that he understands what the new rules are, at least at some level, which is you don't have to say anything that is truthful or that is factual. You just have to say something that is plausible enough for the base to buy it, that feeds into a narrative that your team is okay. And the reality is that you open up, I don't know, Hugh Hewitt's Twitter feed, did I actually name him? You know, and you start to see that people are willing to go, maybe this is really a deep state kind of thing that's going on here. Oh, I have a question for you, Jonathan. What happens to Joe Biden? How badly is Biden hurt? And is there anything that he can do about it?
So I am operating under the assumption that we live in the worst possible timeline. And so the most likely result in any decision point is the worst result. And so I'm assuming that—
I think I'm dark. You know.
The Dems are going to basically, you know, shrug at the next debate when the subject of Hunter Biden comes up and say, look, we do not condone President Trump's very troubling behavior, and we are glad that there's an impeachment inquiry, and we're not taking his side, but there are questions the vice president has to answer, and that this, because of course they want Warren to be the nominee. They're desperate for Warren to be the nominee. And this is enough to weaken him. Once he loses the front runner status, it's going to be very hard for him to take it back, because part of his appeal is I'm the front runner, right? Is, you know, I am the guy who can win, who can beat. And so if I were him, I would go to the mattresses very, very early on this. I would not wait until it looks like you're at a moment of maximum peril. But I don't know. Maybe that's the wrong thing.
So the guys who are really, really, really bad trouble, though, they call it people like Sarah. Say, Sarah, I'm screwed. What am I supposed to do now?
So here's what I can't understand about Joe Biden is why, like, he can either allow this to be an albatross around his neck or he can spin it into a major positive, right? This can be, look at the lengths to which he will go to put me out of front runner status because I'm the guy. I mean, he said it once. He said, like, he knows I'll beat him like a drum, but he's actually mostly been quiet in letting this play out. Like, Joe Biden is not a dominant force in this conversation. He releases statements.
He's sure, not around. But he's invisible. Not.
So the question is like, if he shrinks from this, I think that that is what does him in. I think if he owns this and leans into this and grabs onto it as the massive opportunity it actually is, then he could change the momentum on it and cement his place as the front runner. Look how I'm surprised there aren't more takes like this. Look at the lengths that Donald Trump will go to defeat Joe Biden.
Well, okay, I would go even further than that, though, because, you know, but have you guys read this New York piece, The New Yorker? Was it New Yorker or New York? I'm sorry.
New Yorker.
Adam, really deep dive into Hunter Biden. And the reality is there's a lot there. It's really, really messy. He's had alcohol, drug problems that has essentially destroyed his life, you know, destroyed his marriage. He is really a car crash. But he's also Joe Biden's surviving son, the one guy, you know, with that history of tragedy. And Donald Trump, I think, instinctively, in his reptilian instinct, understands this is the most vulnerable thing for Joe Biden. This is the thing that hurts him the most, that is the most difficult for him, that if he's going to crack the guy, it's going after his children, his kids. So I could certainly imagine a scenario in which Joe Biden comes out and says exactly what you said, Sarah, but also says, look, you know, I have lost two sons. I love my son. He is my only surviving son, and he's had a really rough go of it. He is not perfect. He has had alcohol and drug problems. He's gone through relationships. I still love him, and I am just appalled at the shamelessness of Donald Trump going after my one surviving son because he thinks that's how to get to me. Now, could he pull off that kind of an emotional appeal? Because in the story, it talks about how even staffers around Biden are reluctant to bring up these things because he goes into a very dark place. And I think that's a really authentic part of Joe Biden. He's just somebody who lost his son tragically, you know, one son in that car accident.
He lost a daughter. It was a daughter in the car accident.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry. And Beau Biden, I'm sorry. And he's gone through all of this, and obviously he takes it very much to heart. So would that work with an emotional, don't go after my kids appeal?
I think it absolutely would. I mean, I think it obviously one of those things has to be done in a way where it is authentic, and it has to be delivered properly. Otherwise, it can look horrible and exploitative. But I think because that is clearly what's going on. I mean, the reason he is being so quiet, one assumes, is that he doesn't know what to do in this moment. He can't disavow his son, which he shouldn't. It's hard for him probably to talk about this in that way. But I think there is a way to do some of that and then really go for the idea that this is how badly Donald Trump is afraid. This is how afraid he is of him.
Okay, so I'm the old guy in the room. You guys don't even remember this. You don't remember Ed Muskie in New Hampshire, do you?
No.
See, this is depressing here, you know?
Tell me.
Tell us a story, Charlie, about the old days.
Oh, gosh. You got to see your face, though, on that one. Okay, so Ed Muskie is the Democratic frontrunner, and he goes to New Hampshire, and somebody had accused him of, I don't know, they did use the word canuck or something like that. It's not really important. He cried. He was so emotional about it, he cried. Now, there are some people who believe that he didn't actually cry, that it was just simply snowflakes on his face that had melted. But in any case, in 1972, a candidate crying was considered unpresidential and disqualifying, and that really kind of ended Ed Muskie's career. Now, see, I bring this up because that was the model then. I think Joe Biden crying is not a deal breaker anymore. I mean, as long as he doesn't, like, you know, blow snot or anything like that. Yeah. You think it is?
Yeah. The way to answer this is with strength.
Okay.
This is
righteous indignation. Have you no shame?
No, not even righteous indignation. Total and utter confidence because he's in the right morally. He did. This is the key part of all of this. What he and the Obama administration did was directly counter to Hunter's interests. Like, this is, it isn't like, oh, we didn't take his interest into consideration. It's that what if we were going to act in his interests, we would not have done this. And I would just simply lean into it as, you know what, Donald Trump, you're a big fucking pussy because you know that I'm coming for you.
So no crying, but saying you're a fucking pussy.
No, okay. I 100%.
We're going to have to bleep so many things in this.
No, no, I think you podcast, lean yeah. all but, the way into this do... as essentially total tough guy. And none of this is explaining. None of it is, you stay by your kid. You don't hang your kid out to dry. But you explain that you are 100% in the right and that all of this is because he's afraid of you.
Okay.
Nothing. And because he's weak.
So I agree. I totally 100% agree with that. But what I can't figure out is why he's not doing it.
Is he just waiting? Is he just sitting
waiting.
Back saying,
right? You don't want to become the story at the moment when the story is as bad for Trump as it has ever been. Right. I mean, yesterday was the worst day of the Trump administration.
Yeah, but the things aren't good for Joe either. And this is working against him right now and he's got to see it. And so I think, you know, if public opinion is soft right now, it will cement in the next, probably by the end of the weekend. And so, like, he has only some period of time to do the thing that you just said and come out hard and put Trump back on his
heels.
Yeah,
I would do it this weekend, frankly.
Yeah.
Right? Well, because there won't be any more developments news-wise.
I was wondering that, too, when I was watching television this morning. I was flipping back and forth between the various cable channels and saying, do I even see Joe Biden's picture?
No, it's like on Nancy Pelosi.
Well, the only problem with your scenario, Jonathan, is, you know, what was Hunter Biden up to? I really don't want to go here, but let's be honest about it. There's, you know, Hunter Biden got the $50,000 a month contract with the Ukrainian gas company because he's Hunter Biden, because he's the vice president's son. I mean, this is buck raking. I mean, right? It's there's no way to anything other than saying it's swampy. Not
this
illegal.
This is what happened with George W. Bush, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I would say this is what happens with all children of high-ranking politicians at all levels everywhere, and it is unfair and it's unjust. And it's part
and
of
that's
our lousy
why I'm going
capitalist.
To vote for Donald Trump right. and the Trump family. This is the problem.
No, but this is part of the base corruption of capitalism and why some of us in this room are not super into capitalism. Because there's no corruption
in
socialism.
Don't blame capitalism. Don't blame capitalism.
No, but is it absolutely corrupt? Yes. So and this is true again for every
adult. You
don't have
to be capitalist to be corrupt.
I mean. Every adult child of high-ranking politicians. And so all you can do is try very hard to hold the politicians themselves to a high standard of making sure they're not actually giving over the favors.
Well, what is interesting is that as far as I can see, there's not even an accusation that Joe Biden himself has done anything wrong.
No,
I mean,
they
Hunter
were
Biden's a mess.
Millions and millions of dollars very quickly.
Yeah.
Out of China and Ukraine. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
This
no.
is part of the it's China too. Somehow the Bidens were taking millions and millions of dollars. Again, not true. $50,000 a month. It's a lot of money. It's not millions and millions.
But Joe himself.
Right now, what but this is what Trump said. He said both of them. The Bidens.
Have we heard anything
plural.
That Joe Biden himself no. has done anything
other than so what's happening is people are releasing that tape of
right,
him
out of context
it's completely out of context of him saying that that's how they got rid of the prosecutor there when to JVL's point the prosecutor was actually making life harder for Biden's son and that's the only kernel of truth that the Fox News sort of set seems to need to try to muddy the waters up about Joe Biden because when you say you read that New Yorker piece and it's damning what it's damning about is that Hunter Biden seems like a bit of a ne'er-do-well, troubled kid.
It has
nothing to do with Joe Biden.
No, it's tragic.
And also, Hunter Biden has experienced, just like Joe Biden, has a tremendously tragic life where he's lost people and has lived in the spotlight. And so I think...
No, it made me feel more sympathetic to Joe Biden reading that because you're thinking, as a father, you think, if my son had gone through all of this, you know, how difficult and how painful this would be to deal with it, especially for somebody who you know treats family as you know seriously, but then to have to take it at the hands of Donald Trump.
That's
I mean, this
other,
is the thing is, I mean,
the
you know,
insanity.
See,
of
this
it.
Is the upside down world that we live in, though,
yes.
because I mean, what are we actually you know experiencing? We're experiencing the corruption of Donald Trump and the Trump family, which is openly and brazenly using his office to enrich themselves. There's conflicts of interest coming up the wazoo. And this is the essence of Trumpism, which is, you know, I'm not the puppet, you're the puppet.
But
I'm not the
emails.
Grifter, you are the grifter. And that we are now talking about anybody else's children while you have Don Jr. and Eric and Ivanka going around the world. Just openly trading on their father's
not
name?
Not just monetizing the role in the White House, but they have roles in the White House. Like Ivanka has an office in the White House. Her husband does high-level diplomacy for the White House and policy without security clearance, by the way. So, like,
while his buildings are getting bailed out by foreign governments.
So unless Joe Biden becomes president and installs Hunter Biden at the head of HUD or something, like, it's not even in the same ballpark. Also, we have a culture, a political culture, in which we have said previously, candidates' kids, now granted, this is a grown man, it's not like a small child, but, like, we don't judge candidates by their kids. We don't as a culture until everything seems to have changed now. But like for a long time, that's just
the other was that leave the kids out of it. I mean, Stuart Stevens had a tweet about this yesterday saying, you know, he'd been involved in, you know, more than a dozen campaigns. And in many of those campaigns, you had stories about, you know, the messy divorces or the criminal records of the children. But the decision was usually made, don't get the kids involved. And now the kids are involved. Even guys like Tom Cotton are out there. You're going after Hunter Biden. But again, why should we be surprised? Yeah, why should we be surprised if here's every other norm of decency has been blown past?
You know, look, if you're Trump looking at the numbers, what else are you going to do? Right? Because Joe Biden is a freight train coming for him. There is a reason. I keep saying this. When's the last time you heard the word Pocahontas come out of the president's lips, right? Everything for like a year and a half was Pocahontas this, Pocahontas that. Remember the Medal of Honor ceremony or whatever? So we also have an Indian hero. We call her Pocahontas. You remember this?
Yeah, those Native Americans staying there.
That has been nowhere since Biden jumped into the race because he is desperately afraid of the guy.
It will come back when Elizabeth Warren's
the
nominee.
She's the nominee,
I mean,
right?
But this is like not really what we're talking about, but it is just worth noting that she is not being vetted right now in the way that she will be vetted in a general because that Pocahontas thing, she's already not doing great with ethnic minorities, with Hispanic voters, with African-American voters. And so when Donald Trump just says Pocahontas on repeat, those voters will be reminded that she utilized someone else's status in order to excel her own advancement, and that is not going to play well with groups with whom she is already weak.
That's so obviously true. Now, okay, getting ahead of ourselves. So if, in fact, Joe Biden falls off the front-runner status, let's say that he falls out of the lead, has to leave the race, who picks up the non-lefty mantle? Is there anybody in the moderate track that could fill his spot? Because I'm not seeing it right now.
Well, that's what Pete is trying to do.
Well, Pete and Klobuchar, but I don't see how they get what their path to victory is.
Yeah, no, I don't think there is a path for victory. There would have been for Harris. Had Kamala Harris decided she was going to run as the moderate understudy, then I think you could make an argument that if Biden drops out, she could have been waiting there to inherit his voters. But she didn't, and I think she's basically cooked. So, yeah, no, we're headed to President Warren, or rather President Trump when he defeats Warren. Again, the worst possible outcome, she wins by 5 million votes. He finishes with 271 electoral votes, and it's all over, right? It's all thrown by, as you said before we came in the studio, by like the Maine congressional district or something.
There will be a recount in Maine.
And it will be by ranked choice voting.
the podcast we had on Friday with Kyle Condick of Sabato's Crystal Ball. People need to go back and look at the map because the Sabato Crystal Ball right now has a 243-243, and the only swing states are, I'm doing this from memory right now, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Arizona, and I think it may be leaving one out. No, he had Michigan actually leaning Democratic.
Okay, he had that blue.
So it is extremely, first of all, you realize that with everything that's going on here, you know, it's possible to be extremely close in the Electoral College, decided by a handful of swing votes. No reason to necessarily think that the popular vote winner will in fact win all of that. So it is, these worst case scenarios are certainly very, very possible. And I did ask him the question. I said, so can you show me, looking at this map, show me one state here that Elizabeth Warren wins that Joe Biden wouldn't win?
What did he say? Did he
laugh? He actually had a pretty good answer. He thought that to the extent that Trump was able to get to the left of Hillary Clinton running as a populist disruptor, that if he could portray Biden as a status quo establishment candidate, he could still get back some of his populist mojo, much more difficult to do with Elizabeth Warren, which I thought was a reasonably plausible argument.
So this is plausible. This is the problem, though, is that, yes, could she potentially pick up white working class voters or even some of the suburban voters who are ready to jump ship? She totally could. Her problem is going to be with Hispanic and African-American men who really need to turn out, and African-Americans in general desperately need to turn out. And the question is whether or not they're going to turn out in Detroit and, you know, in those key, in Philadelphia, those key swing states, where I think she is not an ideal candidate.
Well, I know we've all been focusing on urban and suburban voters, but my latest obsession is the are the rural voters, because, you know, you look at a state like Wisconsin, and I'm among those, and I said this on the podcast before, who, you know, really pushed the argument that Hillary lost Wisconsin because African American voters in Milwaukee didn't turn out. The reality is, though, the big hemorrhage of votes is in upstate rural Wisconsin, where white working class voters just dramatically shifted from Obama to Trump. And I just don't see Elizabeth Warren as the candidate to get them back, particularly if they're going to be running on hardcore gun control and things like that. I don't see how that issue plays.
Or executive orders to eliminate fracking, which is one of the biggest industries in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, that'll go great in Pennsylvania.
I don't know what she's thinking.
Well, no,
I do. You know, she has to get to the left of Bernie somehow.
Yeah, but running for office, pledging to destroy an industry that employs lots of the kinds of voters that you need to win a state, I do wonder whether or not they play out to the end game.
Long-term thinking from a candidate promising socialized medicine and the destruction of private health insurance, I don't believe it. I mean, this is right. This is her whole pitch. It's like short-term sugar rush stuff.
Okay, so this is the weekend, so you got to cheer us up, Sarah, because we're in JVL land of the worst possible timeline.
So I tweeted something this morning that I said, I think there are going to be more Republicans than people think who start to do the right thing. I know. This is what
I had the same reaction he did.
Yeah. Okay.
I want what she's having.
All right. So this is my pitch. Lamar Alexander is retiring.
Yeah. Okay.
Isaacson's retiring. Mitt Romney is ready to lead a cohort of adults in the Senate. And the thing is they don't have to come out in this moment for impeachment. What they need to come out for in this moment is to say that it is wrong. So if you were watching the DNI testimony the other day, there was this moment, and I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but one of the reps looked in the camera and said, I want to say to the president, I think what you did was wrong. It was bad.
The guy from Ohio.
Yeah. And I think if people start to do more of that, not even talking about impeachment, but just come out and condemn the action, which is objectively condemnable, that it can be a momentum shifting thing. And so I think this weekend is going to be the weekend where we know whether momentum's going to shift or
okay,
not.
But here, I'm holding up three fingers here.
Yeah.
You gave me three names.
All right, so let me give you
some. You have to keep counting.
Okay, Murkowski.
Okay. Collins.
Collins.
Mm-hmm.
Portman and Toomey.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
No. Will Hurd.
Will Hurd's in
okay,
the
so
house.
Okay, so now we're, I know, okay, now okay. We're, I'm moving to the well, house now.
You didn't go to SAS.
Huh? Sass? No, Sass will
okay.
be on my list.
All right.
Mike Lee would maybe be on a list.
Mm-hmm.
How many do I have right now?
Not enough.
No, oh, not to impeach. Again.
Okay, you're just saying,
okay.
Because this is actually, you're making a distinction between voting to impeach and saying, look, I'm willing to say that this is wrong. Now, it is interesting that you had some representatives who were calling for the release of the complaint who made the distinction, I am not in favor of impeachment, but...
Yeah.
So you can say, I'm not making a judgment on impeachment, but I think it is important to say that this behavior is inappropriate. And that starts moving the dial. By the way, we haven't mentioned, this is a significant development, I think. You have two Republican governors.
Two Republican
who
governors,
came out in favor
right.
of impeachment. The governor of Massachusetts and the governor of Vermont. I mean, these are not red states, but that is not insignificant, right? That you do have two Republican governors who've already endorsed impeachment, which is actually kind of an undercovered story, wouldn't you say?
Yes, and I think that Governor Hogan could potentially be somebody who comes out for impeachment. I think people forget about governors because they don't actually have a vote,
right.
But they can certainly do some of the momentum-shifting things. And I think that Ben Sasse, when he came out and said, you know, his cautionary note to Republicans was, do not circle the wagons yet. We do not know enough. And I think if you can get enough Republicans right now to start saying we need more information, we're not at impeachment yet, but let's keep looking at this. This whistleblower report is a roadmap for a lot of new stuff to come
out. It is.
And so what if I wanted to cheer you up, what I would say is like, we don't need to game impeachment and count impeachment votes yet. What we need are for Republicans to say not to shut down the idea and to keep pursuing it so that it looks like a responsible is a responsible bipartisan investigation that has credibility with the American public at its end.
All right, do you guys want something happy?
Yes, please.
Okay. If you wanted to go the full Game of Thrones scenario, the person you have to watch is Pence. The chances of Mike Pence showing up as the VP on the ballot in 2020 are what? 1 in 3? 1 in 5? Right? He's going to have to be replaced.
Oh, you think so?
Okay. No, I don't agree.
No, everybody has always believed this, right? Nikki Haley.
Let's play it
or
out.
Or Tulsi Gabbard, right? So he's, I'm not. You know what? The number of strange new respect things I'm seeing on Tulsi Gabbard from the right on Twitter and in right wing media over the last few days.
She came out in favor of impeachment today.
Did she?
Yeah, Trump lost Tulsi.
Oh,
sorry.
Oh,
okay.
When you lose Tulsi,
does that mean she's? Does that mean he's lost Putin? Anyway, so Pence
has to... Do you watch her workout videos, by the way?
No.
No.
I've seen her surfing videos.
And I'm glad you just admitted that that's something you watch.
I don't. I'm thinking that Ben does over here, though.
So if you're Pence, and your chances of getting onto the ticket again are at least mixed, you've got to think to yourself, okay, what is my shot at the big job? Because that's all he wants, right? You know that Vice President Pence running in 2024... is a non-starter anyway. He's a black hole of charisma. Nobody trusts him anyway in MAGA world. The only way to do it is by actually seizing the reins of the presidency. You will recall in 1998 that there was an open question as to whether or not Al Gore was going to support Clinton. And in order to dodge having to answer the question, he took his family on like a 10-day vacation to Hawaii. And they put out like an omerta, "No press may disturb us." And the whole thing was Al Gore wargaming out, do I stab him in the back right now and try to force him out of office, or do I stick by him and then run as his presumptive heir? And Gore, to his eternal disappointment, chose to stay by Clinton. Maybe Mike Pence comes to a different conclusion.
You think a guy's got no charisma? You think he's a black hole of charisma?
Maybe. No. Have you ever been, like, gotten goose flesh and... you know, the hairs on your arm stood up because of Mike Flood.
Charlie Sykes, this is Mike Pence calling. It is Monday morning, and I wanted to let you know that I'm going to be in Wisconsin with Scott Walker middle of this week, and just wanted to reach out and see if it might be possible for us to have a quiet cup of coffee together. I'd love to have a chance to sit down with you. I think you know from our past.
Okay, I'm getting goosebumps.
What a big fan I've been. From back in my radio days all the way through my tenure in Congress and as governor of Indiana. And I'd love to have a chance to sit down quietly.
You guys wouldn't meet alone. I hope you'd have a third party there and you keep the door open.
This was July 2016.
I just want to make it clear that this is not anything
recent. That cup of coffee wasn't so quiet, Charlie.
Because you know what? If that was in real time, your odds would change rather dramatically. This would have been it, but no.
Yeah, no, I think there's, look, funnily enough, has anybody asked Mike Pence so far if what the president said was appropriate for the chief executive?
So I saw.
Oh, has he already decided?
Yeah. Oh, I saw an interview with him today. It was him and Lou Dobbs. And it you are making a very vulgar motion with that microphone. However, that was the essence of the interview. it was him being like, we are just so pleased with the support that we have been receiving from Capitol Hill. The American public understands that this is really about Hunter Biden. You know, like, it was just an absurd.
Oh, my. Well, yeah, that's not a surprise.
Okay, well, never mind. I take it all back.
Well, but what I thought was surprising was Trump himself, when he kind of was, you know, pushing Mike Pence, saying, you should ask Mike Pence about his contact with Ukraine as well. I was like, wow, that must have gone over well. I mean, it's like all of them are sort of, you know, in a circular firing squad, and they all have, like, you really want to do that? You notice Putin put out a statement saying,
I did.
We certainly hope that they are not going to be releasing the texts of any other conversations, Donald.
Yeah, boss is calling you in for a meeting.
That's right. So, but who has what? Who holds these daggers? I mean, obviously Pence, you know, on your scenario. I mean,
Pompeo, Pence, Barr.
Well, but
right? These guys have futures. Like, what is Bill Barr supposed to do in the year 2025, right? He's got some sort of future ahead of him.
But these guys don't think that way. I think that you just make a list of the people who've been in the White House and were gone now. John Bolton certainly is at the top of that list. And if you're sitting around right now in the Capitol making a list of people Coats. Who might have things to say, I was actually on a radio interview with Jim Mattis this morning. I was on after him, CBC, and they asked him, what do you think about the whistleblower? And he was saying that, you know, whistleblowers are not traitors; they are patriots. There are a lot of people out there.
He was talking about Rudy Giuliani, right?
H.R. McMaster is out there. There's a lot of folks that might have stories to tell.
The worm can turn on this fast.
Well, you know, and again, going back to my initial reaction was that this is the only whistleblower we've had so far, which is really remarkable because you know that a lot of other people—
because everything else is so clean.
Well, I mean, you think about what's going on in the State Department right now. You think about what's going on in the Justice Department right now, what the intelligence community is thinking.
You mean the deep state?
The deep state, all of those folks. And who would have thought that one complaint like this would have had this impact? After all 3 years of the Mueller investigation and the millions of dollars that were spent and all the investigators, and yet this one individual who sits down and writes this account, and that is going to result in the only third president in American history to be impeached, because that's what's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, and it should.
It should.
I mean, right. And the Mueller report was not for naught, because I think that established, it got us to where we are today, where this now, the country is able to hear this, I think, in a clear way.
And and it is understandable. Sarah Longwell, JBL, thank you for coming in.
Thanks, Charlie.
Appreciate it. Well, actually, you didn't come in. I came in. So thank you for letting me come in and do this. And
sorry I was late, guys.
Thank you for listening to the Bulwark Podcast. I'm Charlie Sykes. We will be back on Monday, and we will do this all over again.